Welcome to What the Health, a podcast where we explore the key health issues that are often dismissed. I'm James Jensen, a functional medical practitioner and owner of Hella Health, a holistic clinic focused on treating the root cause of issues rather than the symptoms, by connecting the dots and giving you practical and evidence-based solutions.
And I'm Julie Johnston, one of James's clients, and I also happen to be his PR consultant who, let's be honest, basically strong-armed him into doing this podcast.
So if you've been going around in circles, feeling dismissed and not getting the results you deserve, then you're in the right place.
Because as you always say, James, just because something is common doesn't mean it's normal.
Exactly. So let's drill down to what's really going on.
James, here we are at our last episode for this season where we've invited some of your friends onto the podcast. What a great season it's been.
Yeah, it's been awesome actually. Having all these people that are potentially smarter than me and hopefully not outshining me, but I guess it is what it is, isn't it? That's how we all work together and learn off each other.
I think it just shows that you've got some very clever friends and also a lot of people in the industry who really support health and wellness from a very holistic level. And today, I know we're very excited about today's guest, who is Jason Lang from Atlas Soils. And James, you met Jason a little while ago, and I've met Jason before as well. He's very passionate about soil health and doing some great things in this space, and you really nerded out on soil health when you got talking to him, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I knew it was important, and there's a local Facebook group, Townsville Lawn Fanatics, I think it is, and I saw Jason was posting some things about soil health and microbes, and I was like, this is the sort of stuff I'm interested in, and that sort of struck up a bit of a conversation, and then lo and behold, we became neighbours at one stage as well. So yeah, Jason's always been helping me with my lawn, and we've been nerding out over soil and all the fun things related to soil.
So let me tell you, if you think that soil is not interesting or that it's a very odd choice for a topic on a health and wellbeing podcast, let me tell you, you will be very surprised at the information shared today. Welcome, Jason. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
And so, Jason, can we kick off by having you introduce yourself a little bit about what you do and Atlas Soils and the work you're doing in this soil health space?
Yeah, sure. Well, I guess my primary job's a dad and a husband, so that takes up the majority of the week. But Atlas Soils is really, it's a collaboration of local businesses, and we're three dads. We're primarily research focused, and we're an impact-based business, which is code for caring. And so we just have been slowly turning things that the city would throw away into products and services that heal soils, and we're really passionate about, in particular, urban soils. And I think that's for me, it's going back to, there's this one tool that gives us the chance to improve water quality for our reef, that improves our health, that can actually drive weather, that can reduce electricity, that just has all of these wonderful threads. And so it took me probably 20 years to realise that the most important thing that I can do as a sustainability practitioner is actually soil health.
Amazing. And so just talk us through, so you've got, a parcel of land where you're remediating this soil, and you've created a movement where you're collecting food scraps and coffee granules from local businesses. Is that correct? How does it all work?
Yeah, so it's sort of been on and off for the last 3 years. So we're about to launch, I don't think I've told you guys yet, but it's a 1 million coffees project. It's with kids across the Townsville community. And the reason we're doing that is because we know that we can take the coffee pods and the coffee grounds from schools and make a product that can improve the health of soils in schools. And that might seem like a kind of a weird thing to do, but it's where our kids play, and it's where they interact and where they first experience the reef. The reef actually starts at home and at the school. So we've been working with Coles and some of these other, suppliers of resources, we call them, food, to learn together how to make things that improve soils.
Amazing. So let's step us back a little bit. Tell us, how has soil health changed over the years?
I can speak from a city perspective. Like, my observations as an environmental officer in local government was that we really mistreat our soils. So, like, most of us have lived in or built a home, what typically happens in the urban fabric is we compact the crap out of the butte. So first thing we do is strip the valuable topsoil off with all the biology that we need for ourselves. We put it in a mound somewhere and then we run big machines over it and compact it in order to meet the engineering requirements of a house. And then so through that, we take all the organics, we take all the air, all the life, and then we build a house on it, and then we throw some turf on it. Often it's the last part of a build. And then we wonder why we have some of the highest water use on the planet. We actually have taken all the infiltration and life out. And so I've watched this, and worse yet, we bury things. We bury things in soil. So when you look across the city in any new build, you see things like paints and plastics and all kinds of things that end up just being a home for home in the soil. And so those things have feedback loops. They show their head, rear their head many years to come. So I've watched a really sad mistreatment of urban soils in particular, and it took me a long time to realise that, hey, that actually has a pretty profound impact on us as a community. And whilst I care about agricultural abundance and nutrient density and all those fun things, the elephant in the room is actually urban soils.
So in terms of like where our kids, if we can get our kids outside and playing, but if they're outside playing in the soils, you think that's having an effect on our bodies and health as well now?
Yeah, well, for sure. Like it's not just you are what you eat, like you are where you play. And so like my kids at home, like and my fingernails are, have millions of species of bacteria, microbes that actually transfer to my mouth, transfer to my gut. And so the soil that I interact with and the soil that our kids interact with, of course we ingest that. It's actually a critical part of establishing things that James will know much more about than me, but a complex microbiome. You have to interact with that. And if you decide to interact with some bad habits, like it might be herbicide applications or different things that you do in your lawn and in gardens and open spaces, that has an impact. Well, this is what we were nerding out about. So James was sending me scientific papers on the human gut that was sharing bacteria that I was seeing in scientific papers about soil. So I remember it in particular. We were like, oh, it's actually the same. It's the same thing. And so, yeah, there is this nexus there that's often forgotten.
Yeah, so I think, as Jason mentioned, well, technically that we believe that there's probably at least 10 bacterial cells for every cell we have in our body. So by definition or by cell numbers, we're actually more bacteria than we are anything else. And you can imagine that, you know, how we get that diversity from those bacteria. And, you know, like we say, you know, diversity is the spice of life, and it's very true with bacteria. The more bacterial diversity we have, the healthier we are. And these bacteria in our gut, they're activating nutrients and switching different genes on and off. And part of how we get that diversity is through our soil, and obviously through the, you know, the soil, which improves, you know, the nutrient density and quality of the foods we eat. And those foods then feed our bugs, and our bugs, you know, that's how we get the diversity and therefore the health. And so when we're doing things like damaging soil quality, you know, whether it be through herbicides or things like that, you know, destroying the topsoil, we're effectively impacting our own health. And you can see that a lot. You know, wheat's a good example. We spray, well, not we personally, but wheat in Australia is sprayed with Roundup several times over. And it's because it makes it easier to harvest. And so it makes it stickier and drier, and it's easier to harvest. And then we go and eat those wheat products. So then we're effectively ingesting a herbicide. And herbicides, they're going to kill bacteria. So you imagine all the things that we're ingesting over the period of time that have been touched by herbicides, because they stay in the soil. It's not just sprayed on the plant and then wash it off. It's in the soil. So even plants that are growing in the soil, they're continually getting exposed to those herbicides, which means we're eating them as well. And though that continual exposure to herbicides is actually reducing our microbial diversity. And that's why I think we're seeing people, and even if they're trying really, really hard to eat well, and if they're eating lots of fruits and veggies and things that we would encourage, they're still not getting the full benefit that like they would have, you know, say 100 years ago when we would sort of, you know, grow things in our own backyard and do things that we normally would.
And so, James, is this why we're sometimes seeing people who have nutritional deficiencies, even though they might be eating the rainbow and you know, really paying attention to their diet and what they're putting in their bodies, but it's just a case of the soil health has become poorer over the years, and that's where you're then sometimes needing to prescribe supplements to help boost that. Is that what you're seeing?
Yes, and I mean, to use a specific example, for we see zinc as a really common deficiency in people, and a lot of that's to do with obviously like the zinc content in the soil. But what we do know is when our food is grown in the right or in good quality soil, that the soil and the microbes, that reduces the phytic acid content within our foods, and the higher the phytic acid content in our food, the harder it is to access some of those nutrients. And zinc and iron are actually two key molecules that are greatly, I guess, inhibited by phytic acid. So definitely we can see like the link between soil quality and how it's affecting nutrient density of our food. So it's a massive problem. And I guess that's why it's no surprise that I often have people that are, you know, eating quite healthily, but they're not seeing the benefits of that.
Yeah. So, Jason, you know, for most people, you know, we're, you know, doing our grocery shopping at Coles or Woolworths and, you know, we think we're doing all the right things, popping, you know, the fruit and veggies in the basket and things like that. Can you tell us a little bit about how the fruit and vegetables are being produced by these commercial wholesalers, you know, the types of farms that they're purchasing from?
Yeah, well, I can share my layman's understanding, so that I obviously don't speak for the agriculture industry, but my understanding is you need to, in order to meet the price point to make a commercially viable product, you have to grow things very, very quickly. And the default often to growing things quite quickly is to use synthetic inputs. So I think whilst I haven't delved overly deeply into the nutrient density of those things, I imagine like things like the Sundrop farm, which grows tomatoes in the desert, that's great from a productivity point of view, but there is very little ability to ascertain a nutrient complexity that the gut might need from that environment. So I imagine you're going to see things that in a supermarket shelf that conform with mostly commercial terms, not necessarily nutrient terms. So they'll need to meet a certain size, they'll need to be particular colour. They don't particularly embrace things that are wonderful about life. Like we took a watermelon into a school the other week and the kids laughed at me because it didn't look like a watermelon. It was the most spectacular tasting. We grew it in the park, James.
Yeah, okay.
And just so flavourful. It transports you back in time when you eat it. But the kids were laughing at me because that's not a watermelon. Look at the colour of it. Because they actually have pre-wired through normalising what a watermelon looks like and not just in the supermarket shelf, how we colour it in, the sorts of criteria and exercises we give to our kids at school starts to normalise this perfect thing that isn't actually what we need.
Yeah, that's a really great point. So what's your recommendation of, you know, other than growing it ourselves, where should we be purchasing our fruit and vegetables from? Or is there a shift in Australia from these wholesalers of, you know, are they looking into the soil health and getting back to having fruits and vegetables that are nutrient dense?
I think you are starting to, so there's an agricultural, regenerative agricultural movement. And there's starting to be now really good science in behind why that's a good thing. So the thing with building soil health, both in agriculture from a regenerative agriculture practice and at home, is it's a slower race. So it's starting to normalise that, hey, you got to work on this over time. It's got to be part of an integrated way you manage things. But we're now getting really good rigorous science from agricultural soils that, hey, this regenerative stuff actually works. And so I think as you start to see more things like nutrient density meters, I don't know if they're out yet, but when you start to see that, I think people are going to make decisions not just on the price per kilogram. My hope is that the really woke people, if that's a thing still, I don't know what's cool anymore, will start to understand what the nutrient complexity of their food is and that they're not just getting that from their food. They're also getting that from where they play.
Yeah, and I believe there is a bit of a push of, you know, sort of having some soil health experts, you know, in the agricultural industry helping farmers get their fields up to scratch for that reason. And because there's lots of ways you can tell the soil is healthy, isn't there? Is it by like the touch and smell and all of that?
Yeah, James loves to smell. But yeah, there is, and farmers used to bury their undies years ago. So when we put humus oil, we put fashion waste in Humisaw, that's a nod to the old farmers who used to bury their cotton undies as a proxy for soil health. So if you buried your undies, you'd have a look at it again in a few months' time, and then how broken down that material is actually a good proxy for what the complexity of the biology is. And so now we actually started doing that. Now we're about to do some research with Booty, who turns out they're a bit bigger than I thought. They do a bamboo viscose underwear.
Booty are huge. I love their products.
They're actually really comfy. I'm not wearing them now. But so that they don't have an end-of-life option for their underwear. So we said, all right, we make this product that actually reintroduces complexity into urban soils, and it turns out that we can use nature to break down bamboo viscose. So they're contributing some money into research into Townsville to turn. We got like 20,000 pairs of them. Do you want some, James?
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, so it just so happens there's all these businesses that throw things away that actually, and cities, and bury it, worse yet, they're the perfect ingredients that we actually need to reintroduce the kinds of complexity that we're talking about to urban soils.
And so the soil product that you're making, who are the end users of that? Are you selling it commercially or is it retail?
So we're developing an entire range. It's going to be Living Soils range of products, and it's really, we're not developing it. It's actually kind of revert. What we know is working backwards to go forwards work. So the Lawn Fanatics page that James mentioned, we work with those guys to co-develop a product and specifications of that product, the size, so it could go on a lawn. We did that because that's where most people were playing. Some people say to me, why would you focus on a product that goes on a lawn? Lawns aren't particularly cool. They use all this water. But look at how many people have lawns. Look at all the opportunity to influence water use and diversity in stomach. So, so we have a Living Soils range. We're slowly developing the skills to be able to commercialise that range. So there are biofertilisers. We're looking at biochar, James, and using biochar, which you can make from weeds, as the surface area to hold the nutrients, not the nutrients, the complex biomes that you need. So, yeah, I think we're slowly working with our partners to develop the range and commercialise it, but not for scale. Like, scale's this silly modern thing. Like, we actually need to descale. We don't need to mass produce things. The way the world's really shifting quite quickly is for people to descale, grow things themselves. So we're learning how to develop methods for people to do things for themselves and cities to do things for themselves.
Do you think there, and James, I know you've got a bit of a veggie patch and you're a bit passionate about this. Do both of you think, you know, are we going to see a bit of a comeback of the humble veggie patch in our backyards, of people starting to grow their own fruits and vegetables again?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a push for that. Well, maybe it's the cost of living that will drive it. You know, money talks. But certainly, like Jason said, if you grow your own fruits and vegetables in good soil, it does taste better. And one of the key things that I guess we haven't mentioned yet, and again, I'm not an agricultural expert, but the things that I do know is if you've got good soil quality, you're going to have a healthier plant, and that healthier plant is more resistant to, you know, bugs. It's more resistant to anything that you would, I guess, trying to put commercial inputs in, you know, whether it be pesticides, herbicides, all those things to sort of try and keep your plant healthy and damage-free, so to speak. We know that the better quality of the soil, the better quality of the plant, and the more resilient it is to those things. So it's simple, really, when you think about it. You're going to get a better quality product that's more nutrient-dense and it needs less inputs. It's getting back to nature and, you know, the way it should be, that true ecosystem where, you know, things break back down, break into the soil, the bugs do all that. And it's pretty, I think there is a push towards it. And, you know, even things like we've seen with, you know, chickens. So I've got chickens as well. But when there's a egg shortage, you know, everyone went out and started, you know, getting their own chooks, and I think that, you know, there is an interest in that. And maybe it is, you know, to do with things like COVID as well, where more people are spending more time at home. So they've got the availability or time availability to work in their gardens. And, you know, it's podcasts like this and, you know, that regenerative farming sort of movement that is, I think it's seeing more light and people getting more interested, because it does have a massive impact on our health, not just like physically, but also emotionally.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I see that. So probably 10 years ago now, we developed a little in Townsville, a group called the Urban Food Special Forces Unit. They were kids. And I used to go and volunteer these kids. And the funny thing about urban food is the food is actually the byproduct. The thing, when you ask those kids, why do you want to keep planting watermelons and roundabouts and giving away pump? It was actually the social side of it. So I think for people to understand that growing food or even trying to grow food is a time with kids that's very, very important for them cognitively. And so all those kids were saying they loved spending time with mum and dad. They loved giving the potatoes to their neighbours. They loved thinking about mathematics while they grew corn. It actually, whilst it's good to have complex food, it was the byproduct. So I think what we're talking about here is actually a city resilience project, getting kids off devices and stimulating the brain and actually getting multi-sensory engagement again. That's actually what I'm noticing in our own neighbourhood. Those kids in the park, James, that they're like knocking on the door to go and plant stuff. And they don't. None of them are. Oh, some of them are eating it. Mum and dad are eating it. But it's about actually doing things with someone and feeling part of somewhere. It's a much bigger outcome than just the nutrient.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. You know, even like as an adult, you might plant a tomato, but then you watch it grow, you nurture it, and then you eat it. It's that whole process that I think really lights you up. It's something primal inside you. You know, the same way that someone might go hunting and feel those sort of, you know, those parts of our brain which are primally there. And I think growing fruits and vegetables definitely is part of that. You know, seeing the end project, the way that a builder might build a house and step back at it and look and go, wow, how cool is that? I think it's an opportunity for everybody to watch the, you know, from seedling up to really appreciate it. And, you know, the same way if you cook a meal from scratch, you get that sense of satisfaction that lights up parts of your brain that other things can't normally.
Can I go weird? All right, the other thing I think food does is reintroduces something that's really important, and I'm noticing this in business, is it's the concept of failure. Like, you don't always grow things successfully. That's perfectly okay. Like, for often kids are not going to experience something not working as profound as when they grow something. So, like, for me, I fail every day in business. That's okay. It's like, it's part of how you adapt and evolve and iterate. So I think growing food is actually part of normalizing failure, and I think that's a really important thing.
And likewise, that trial and error of where they're learning of what soils are really good for producing, you know, the best crop, and you know, when they need to water it, and what it needs to be planted beside, and does it need shade or does it need sunlight? All of those things, it's all part of the learning, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't just put a seed on the car park. Like, so the seed and food needs the same things the kids needs. It needs nurture and nutrients and water and love, and like, so yeah, I think there's something special in urban food, and that's probably why we've focused pretty heavily on that in the past, and that's the love component of Atlas. But we've been working on an urban food calendar. James had seen early iterations of it, and that was specific for Townsville, so to help people understand when to plant something and how to plant something. It's not just what you can go and buy something, go and buy some strawberries, or COVID's a good example. Remember when Woolworths gave all of the those little cups out, that just completely destroyed the self-esteem of kids, because they're not for the dry tropics. So if they were lucky enough to have something sprout and they took it outside in the raw and hot sun, kids would be demoralised. So we thought we need to develop a high confidence, you know, combination of seeds that could be used. So yeah, it's important.
So Jason, you're clearly very, very passionate about soil health and, you know, getting people involved at that grassroots level. What's your vision? You know, what would you love to see happen, you know, nationally and internationally?
I think just disappearing this idea of landfills. Like, that's a really old, like, the thought of a city putting things in a big mound and burying it and forgetting, like, hoping that it goes away is silly. So I think what Townsville's doing that's quite special is they're trying to provide, it's called the pantry philosophy. Actually, I'll introduce it here. The pantry philosophy is that if we cleverly separate things as a city at the front end, like coffee grounds for nitrogen, banana peels for potassium, cardboard for carbon, you can actually build products and services and create value streams that didn't exist. And I'm not just talking about commercial value streams, I'm talking about cultural, social. So I guess my fairy tale would be that we don't bury things anymore, and we develop the ability to cleverly separate things in cities to make products and services that heal soils. That's what I really care about. And Townsville is actually, they don't know it, but they're actually getting global recognition and attention for what they're doing.
Yeah. And your soil is a perfect example of where you're using some of those sort of like clothing scraps, food scraps, coffee granules, things like that, that like you said would otherwise be going to landfill, but instead it's going in. And I've actually had the privilege of coming out to your site and I've seen the big mounds of soil and covered up with the tarps. And so it sits, how long does it sit there for usually?
Yeah, for the process of making humus oil takes 6 months, and it actually there's multiple things it mimics in nature. So it mimics the mouth and it mimics the condition for optimal fermentation. So traditional composting, which is a really sort of old way of thinking about how to deal with organics, it gets really, really hot and cooks everything, whereas making humus oil actually provides a moisture conditions around 50% and a temperature conditions around sort of that 30 to 55 over 6 months. That means that when you take that tarp off and you screen it, you actually get a really complex product compared to something like a compost or inert products. So the heavy lift is in what we make in all of these product range is actually the biology. It's worth coming to have another look maybe.
And describe to us, so after that 6 month period, that humi soil, explain to our listeners what it feels like and smells like.
It smells like the forest floor, I guess. Like, and what we find is once people interact with the product, it does, something happens in the brain. I can't explain it, but most of our buyers and some of it's being moved to rehab sites. Once they smell and interact with it, I imagine it's triggering something. It smells like the forest floor. We screen it down to 4 mm-, which is quite a fine product. That's to enable it to be top dressed onto a lawn. So one of the real challenges with reintroducing complex biology to a lawn is, well, how do you do that? And so we screened it right down. And so when it spreads out, it's like a kilogram a square meter. It's quite fine. And we're really trying to move away from any packaging, which is not a good commercial decision. Like, we're always getting, well, why don't you go into Bunnings or why don't you look at national distribution? But that's actually not – a circular economy should always prioritise use of the products as close to where the waste is generated. That's what was so special about North Shore. We had 14 or 15 homes that used about 2 years' worth of things that were going into the bin to make a product.
Wow.
So when you really think about that and the carbon and the transport, like, that's a really high order regenerative outcome, getting it back on a lawn. Putting something on a truck or worse yet a ship and calling it a regenerative product or a sustainability product and moving it across the world, well, that's not what we're interested in. We're interested in enabling really tight circles very close to home.
Yeah, amazing. And James, what's your vision for the future? What would you love to see change with all of this, with soil health and the nutritional quality of the food we eat?
Yeah, I think I'd love to see people, have their own or grow their own veggies where they can, or, from a neighbourhood point of view, if, let's just say your area of, the street's really good at growing tomatoes and you might grow tomatoes and the people down the road might be good at growing potatoes or pumpkins or whatever it is. And I'd love to see, that sort of, certainly like people growing their own things and improving their own soil quality, touching the soil, which obviously have its nice flow and effect for, gut microbiome and health and all those things. So I think there's like Jason's talking about, that sustainable concept where, we can do things in our own area, I think is really, really important. And I think I'm pretty excited by it, actually. Yeah.
So even having like the comeback of community gardens and things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd love to see, big community gardens where, to talk about like working with children. So, you can get schools that can, go and look after their own plot, or there's, certainly lots of little programs where people are continually growing fruits and veggies and learning how it all works and then how they can then do that for themselves and just going the whole way through and, reducing waste and reducing the use of pesticides and herbicides, because yes, we're talking about overall health, but these things are definitely linked in with our water usage as well. So especially in Townsville, we always harp on about how we need more and more water security and all these types of things. But things like using humus oil or where the humi is coming back to humic acid, so those minerals, they're exceptionally good at holding moisture inside soil. So you need a lot less water if you've got the right mineral content within your soil. So, there's water security to be had from it as well. And, yeah, there's there's so many opportunities, and I think if people understood it better, they would definitely want to be on board.
If we can improve the nutritional quality of the produce, do you believe it will have a significant positive effect on people's overall health?
Yeah, definitely. Again, we talk a lot about fertility, and I know that fertility is definitely impacted by uses of pesticides and things like that. So if we're able to use less of those inputs, and we're going to get, you know, we talk about things like zinc. Zinc's a massive part of fertility. So we'll see things like sperm quality improve, you know, fertility improve. But overall health, it just has to improve. And there's multiple studies where you can see, you know, since, I guess, industrialized or agricultural scale farming, that health has declined. Whether or not that's a direct, you know, causation, but there's clearly a correlation. And I think, I don't think you need a special study to understand that as you have better quality soil and better quality produce, that your health is just going to improve exponentially.
And what are your top tips for anyone who wants to give growing some fruit and veggies at home a go? I can't grow anything. Let me rephrase that. To date, I haven't had success and I just need to try harder. What are your top tips for me and other listeners?
Well, maybe I should defer to Jason. He's probably better qualified to answer that. But I would probably start with the soil. Like we say, all disease begins in the gut. I'd say, you know, all fruits and vegetables begin with good soil quality. So I'd be focusing on that for sure.
Yeah, using those months of the year that are nice to be outside. So accepting that it's hard to grow things at certain times of the year for Townsville. So that May, June, July, August, September, October are all wonderful growing times. July, August are kind of that sweet spot where you can plant most things. And in Townsville, raised systems make a little bit more sense because we have extended wet and hot wet conditions that can make it sort of vulnerable to some of those things around root rot. So I think looking at raising the soil and certainly having good quality soil and knowing when to plant things. And leaning on your neighbours a bit, asking them how they're going, looking at local groups, permaculture groups, finding that local context is really important. And can I touch on something about food that we haven't touched on that I think is important, whether you put it in or not, is that the other thing we do with grown of food that's in supermarkets is we there's two big things that scare the crap out of me. It's plastics and PFAS. We put food in, we suffocate it mostly in this plastics, which we're now finding to be in our bloodstream and brain, like smaller than a red blood cell. And in Townsville, we're particularly vulnerable to microplastic inhalation. And then the other thing we do is we have PFAS in a lot of our packaging. So like coffee cup lids, the popcorn that you get, the microwave popcorn, packets of McDonald's chips. There's really firm science now around that turning up everywhere. I think it was 10,000 or 10,000 umbilical cords and women had PFAS. So I think when you grow your own food too, as well as the social stuff and the nutrient complexity stuff, you're also really working towards reducing some of these other secondary impacts from packaging and synthetic chemicals. You know.
Yeah, that's an amazing point. So, Jason, anyone who would love to, I guess, connect with you and learn a little bit more from your wealth of knowledge, what's the best social channels they can check out to follow you?
I think I put more technical stuff. I'm probably overly active on LinkedIn. People probably get cranky. But, the research element of what we do is quite visible on LinkedIn. We like to share what we're learning and what's failing. Facebook's more around, the specific products. And so, the Lawn Fanatics page, you'll get some of the specifics on how to use products. But if you're really interested in some of the nuts and bolts, LinkedIn's probably the best format.
And that's for Atlas Soils and also for your personal one, Jason Lang?
Yeah, Jason and Jason Lang and then Atlas Soils. I'm probably a bit more active as Jason Lang, but I normally tag Atlas in on that.
Yeah.
We've got a pretty small fan base, but it's great. What I love about Townsville is people actually really showing a lot of interest in this stuff. And as we learn, because we don't know it all, we certainly don't. And the scientific model is a bit slow to catch up on this because we're talking about things that happen at a very rapid rate and highly complex relationships. You can't reduce some of this stuff down into scientific rigor. So I think we have to get on those platforms and share what we're learning together. And I'm seeing that happen. That's kind of cool to watch.
Yeah. Well, Jason, thank you very much for sharing your knowledge with us. I think after today's episode, James won't be the only one who loves nerding out talking about soil. What do you think, James? Do you think we've inspired some other listeners?
I hope so.
And that's just also because selfishly you want to grow your circle of people you can talk about soil health with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I feel sorry for people that have been at a barbecue with Jason and I.
I have to commend you on acknowledging the bridge. All right, so very few people are talking about this connection between soil and gut. And so when I hear you talk about the kind of results you get by influencing nutrients and gut complexity, I get goosebumps because it's like that reinforces why we're doing what we're doing. So I love hearing the work that you're doing and the actual tangible local case studies on how what you're doing is having an impact, because it's kind of stuff we know that we might be helping, but when you hear stories, real stories, it's like it's quite inspiring. So thanks. Thank you for making that dot joining happen.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, and hopefully it keeps inspiring others to get involved in this whole health and wellness movement. So thank you, Jason. And James, as we mentioned, we've had some fantastic guests join us this season, and, you know, very much in line with what Jason was just saying in terms of, you know, people that are really on board, part of that health and wellness movement.
Yep, collaboration is key.
Lovely. Well, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed nerding out on soil health as much as we did, and we look forward to seeing you all next season.
Cool. Thanks, everyone. We hope you enjoyed this episode of What the Health. If you want to keep hearing more, follow us on the Apple Podcast app, where you'll be notified every week when we drop a new episode.
And if you love the show and want to support us, feel free to share this podcast with your friends and family, or go and leave us a review.
Yes, please help us make Julie's life easier when she's trying to market this podcast.
Of course, it would be remiss of me not to mention that you can go book a consultation in person or online with James to discuss all your health concerns. Head on over to www.hellohealth.au. Plus, you'll get free postage on any products you purchase.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.